You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC.
Welcome to this episode of the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast, where we try to always inform, encourage, and equip all of our listeners to help them be the best they can be to reach children, students, families with the gospel. And so I'm super excited because normally we focus a lot on children's ministry, family ministries. We haven't done a lot with student ministry as of yet. That's going to be changing into our focus a little bit more, especially because most of my listeners know that that's my role now is to be more all-encompassing, where I serve both students and children. And so I have a very good friend of mine who has written a fantastic book, actually a couple books, but he gave me the privilege of checking out his second book in the collection. And his name is Mel Walker. He has been in student ministry, youth ministry for a long time. I get to say that and feel good because I've been called seasoned. So he's more seasoned than I am, and he won't even take offense to it because he loves it. And he certainly doesn't act his age, which is a compliment, because I'm glad, because I want to be just like him when I grow up. But Mel, thanks for coming on the program. I so appreciate you and your impact on so many student leaders that I know. Many of my brothers in ministry have been impacted by you. And your heartbeat, and I know we all say that with high praise of we want to be like Mel. Thanks for coming on my podcast. I really appreciate it.
Well, Tom, thanks. Thanks for having me on. It's great to talk to you again, and you've been an encouragement to me, too, for years. And, yeah, I'm probably more seasoned than you are, but we're both veterans. We'll leave it at that for the time being. Yeah.
There we go. Well, tell my listeners a little bit about who Mel Walker is, because, you've been around in ministry, not just student ministry, but that's where your heart is. So share a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, basically, I'll probably start with the most important things to me, other than, I'm a follower of Christ, and I want to make the biggest impact I can for eternity, for the gospel, and for Jesus Christ. And so that kind of guides my life, and my mission statement is from Psalm 78 that the generation to come might know. And I'm a guy that's given my life to that. I've been in active youth ministry for over 40 years. My wife and I have been married for almost 42 years. And we have three children. All three of our kids are grown. And they are all in vocational ministry in one way or another, doing student ministry. My daughter is a missionary in Berlin, Germany, and she is a youth worker. My son is a missionary on secular college campuses here in northeastern Pennsylvania, where I live. And then my youngest son is a youth pastor in Ankeny, Iowa. And we now have eight grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings me to what I want to talk about today. And that is my new book is called Going On for God. And I am really passionate as a youth worker, as a longtime youth worker. I want my kids and my student ministry to grow up and go on for God, but I want my children and my grandchildren. I pray for those little guys every single day that they'll grow up and go on for God, and that's really, really important to me.
That is awesome, and there is no doubt. And so I want to encourage our folks to listen to this, to get this book, share it with your youth leaders, parents. This is a book that was written in that way. And so let's dive in, Mel. Why'd you write a book? Give us the overall focus for this, because it really has to do about intergenerational student ministry, youth ministry, but there's so much more into this.
Yeah. Well, let me give you, Tom, if it's okay, a little bit of a background.
Yeah.
In my ministry, I've been, and I didn't really go into what I've done vocationally, but for the past several years, I've served at two different Christian colleges in recruiting, and then I've been an editor of church youth materials, and along the way, I started a youth ministry nonprofit, which is called Vision for Youth. Well, anyway, in my ministry, for the almost the last 30 years, I've had the chance to visit in about 30 different churches a year for that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And I think that gives me a unique perspective to be an observer. And because of my ministry, most often I do things that relate to student ministry or Christian ed or children's or family ministry. And again, I've been in churches of all different sizes, of all different stripes, and that has given me the opportunity to be an observer. What are the trends? And I'm like a lot of other guys in student ministry. The thing that started to, that God used to start a burden in my heart was that statistic that says the number one time that people walk away from church and walk away from their relationship with God is right after they graduate from high school.
Yeah.
And I've read all the books. I've been an insider in youth ministry and so on. And I get it that there are a lot of people that are blaming student ministry, that blame parents, that blame the church and all of that kind of stuff. And so that actually started the journey for me. And I read Lifeway, I read Barna, I read all of that. And so I wanted to find out, is that true? And is that what people that I know are seeing, mm-hmm. and are seeing? And that led me to an opportunity to have a conversation with hundreds of young adults, dozens of churches, dozens of youth pastors, of senior pastors, lead pastors, and so on, where I became convinced that one of the reasons why students walk away is that what we do is we keep and I'm a student ministry guy. I hope your listeners understand. Yep. I believe in youth ministry. I've given my life to it. But if all we do is keep kids in the basement until they graduate from high school, we kick them out of youth group, we tell them to go to big church, they're not gonna.
Right.
Because one of the reasons is there's no sweat equity in church. They don't know anybody. And so my last book is called Intergenerational Youth Ministry, and it's why a balanced view of connecting the generations is essential for the church. Mm. And so that's been out for a few years, and that I had the chance to speak about that all over the country. And then it hit me, okay, I believe in that, and I believe that we have to connect the generations. But actually, I wanted to take a step back as a dad, as a grandfather, as a youth worker, and that is, what are we trying to do? And so in my book, I ask a question which is bigger than life on the back cover, and that is, what do we want for our kids? Yeah. What I want for our kids, and that's the kid. I'm still a part-time youth pastor. Tom, we talked about seasoned. I'm 64 years old, and I'm still a youth pastor. What I want for the kids in my youth group, what I want for my children, what I want for my grandchildren, is that they'll grow up and go on for God.
Yeah.
And so that became a growing passion. How do we do that? It's not a formula. It's not a recipe, but let's be intentional.
Yeah.
And as I put in the book, I want to be a part of that conversation where I can talk to church leaders and Christian parents about that.
Yeah. And you boil this down to 10 conversations. This was an easy read to just walk through. And I say easy as in time-wise, but there's a lot of challenging stuff in this book, Mel. Where you're challenging the reader to start thinking through and asking some of the questions that need to be asked on a big scale to start conversations amongst youth leaders, amongst their senior leadership, amongst yep. parents, so that we can slam that back door shut. And I think all of our listeners agree that both in children's ministry and in student ministry, youth ministry, that if we don't do this, we're wasting our time right now.
Absolutely.
Because we're not fulfilling the mission that we all really joined up for.
Absolutely.
And we all want to see kids go on and truly, you know, realize and reach that full potential they have in Christ. So you started this conversation. So first off, so that people understand, since they didn't get the first book, what do you mean by intergenerational student ministry, youth ministry, and why is that important to understand what that
is? I kind of wondered, is the title an oxymoron, two things that seemingly disagree? But intergenerational youth ministry, and here's why. It's not really a student ministry book, a youth ministry book. Instead, it's that student ministry is important. Again, Tom, you know me. You've been around my ministry for a long time,
yeah.
And I I believe in student ministry. I'm a lifer. But in my entire ministry, I think we're at the place where student ministry is being de-emphasized more than ever before. It seems to me that one of the trends in church life is the most important thing is the Sunday morning service, is the worship, the message, that everything is geared toward that. And a lot of that makes sense to me. But what I want to do is have a church that connects the generations, where the young people feel a part of what God is doing in all generations. And I think the churches that I've been in, and it's interesting, Tom, because you and I talked about this, is we're lousy at transitions from kids ministry to student ministry, to middle school ministry to senior high ministry. Yep. We're lousy at young adult ministry, and then we're lousy at adult ministry to senior adult ministry. Yeah. We're not very good at that in the church. Mm-hmm. And so the intergenerational part is, what can we do to connect the generations without blowing up youth ministry, without that being done away with? I believe in that with all my heart, but let's connect the generations.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, because I think it's so important, and I think research plays it out, and my own experience, your own experience plays this out, that the more connected a student is to an adult, the greater, the harder it is for them to walk away.
Yep. Like,
because they've got a relational connection there. So the more people we can put in that student's life circle, spiritual circle, that becomes that barrier to them, because if they're not, they are going to walk away.
Yeah. A lot of us quote that, it's really the famous Chap Clark statistic out of Fuller Youth Institute, but he says in order for a kid to stay, that he or she has to have 5 strong relationships with other adults other than their parents, or they won't stay. And so basically it's my mission, and that is, how do we develop those 5 relationships? Right. And again, I think it starts by older people praying for kids. And then I'm a big fan of mentoring. All of my books have a chapter at least about mentoring. And the idea is that starts in the church foyer. Mm-hmm. Which starts by older people praying for kids specifically, individually, by name, and then just going to talk to them in the church foyer, where there's no threat. It's just a public place, and just say, hey, how's soccer, how's band, how's algebra? Yeah. That it starts with those kinds of conversations.
Yeah, and I want to get into that a little bit more too, because I think that's part of what you get into in some of your conversations, with the mentoring thing. But one of the first things that I can hear people saying in both children's ministry and in youth ministry is, but I've tried to get older people to come into my ministry, and they've said, I've served my time. What would you say to a younger leader? Because a lot of leaders are young. I work with a young team of great student ministry guys and some children's ministry gals are just amazing, but they're young. And so how does a young leader convince an older generation that they're still valued and needed to get involved in those ministries?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I'm going to say again that maybe I'm a guy that can talk about that, because, I'm pushing that senior citizens thing already too. So maybe I'm a guy that can talk about that. But here's the thing. A few years ago, the National Network of Youth Ministry did a survey that said 90%, 9 out of 10 of millennials would love to have an adult mentor. So this generation wants it, and Generation Z, I'm convinced, is even more so. So what's the disconnect? And that is, people my age, baby boomers or older, will say, I'd love to be involved. Tom, I'd love to be involved with kids, but I'm either too busy or I paid my dues.
Yep.
And I'm convinced, and I put this in my book, that real mentoring, if you Google mentoring, there's millions of hits in education, there's millions of hits in business, and a few hits in the local church. And I'm convinced that the best mentoring takes place in church. And here's the thing, and I think this is the thing that answers your question, and that is, I'm convinced that true mentoring is not necessarily a commitment of extra time. True mentoring is, do what you do, just do it with somebody younger.
Ooh,
do what you
good.
Do. Just do it with somebody younger, which is why I'm a huge fan of the church foyer. And it takes the threat. I know all of us in kids ministry are concerned about child protection and clearances. We have to be.
Yeah.
And that it grieves me that we have to talk about that.
Right.
But I'm convinced that mentoring takes place. So how do we get this started? I think go into the senior citizens. You know, everybody always asks me, well, how do we get this started? And I always say, start young and start old.
Uh-huh.
Encourage the kids to pay respect to the older people because, Tom, in our culture, they feel left out to pasture too.
Oh, absolutely.
They feel left out, like the church is changing, the music is different, the clothing is different. They feel left out. So show them respect, minister to them. But one of the things that they can do is pray specifically for emerging generations. I put this story in my book, but I was visiting the church, so it's not even my idea. And the youth pastor took me to the senior citizen Sunday school class, and he had made baseball card size prayer cards for every kid in the youth group. And the senior citizens were trading those baseball card size pictures. And I'm not kidding you. The day I was there, these old people were going, you know, I'll trade you 2 ninth graders for a senior, you know. And on the back, it's like Johnny is a freshman at Lincoln High School and he plays in the band. He's on the soccer team. And what happened is those older people went out in the foyer and they started to find the kids that they're praying for, and it developed a relationship in the church foyer. Do what you do. Just do it with somebody younger. And I'm convinced I'm convinced that the oldest people in the church want the same opportunities for the younger people that they had when they were this age too.
Yeah. Oh, that's some good stuff, Mel. I agree. I think that is so true. And the church has changed fast. And I even look at my parents who are in their 70s and who would love to serve more. And it felt like this shift has pushed them away.
Yep.
And so it's going to take, you're right, it's going to take that younger generation reaching out. But I love what you said. We also need to pay respect. Those people have paved the way, and we can't push them off. We need to honor that history and pay homage to it and learn from it, because then we can gain their trust.
The truth of it is the generations need each other. The older people need the life and energy and vitality and the idealism of youth. And the younger generation need the wisdom and the maturity and the reverence. Like, do you ever pray with an old timer and they kick into King James language? I mean, even my generation, I want to say, like, wait a minute, you don't talk that way. But there's something reverent about that. And if we as we connect the generations, we're talking about building relationships, so that takes time. And let's realize that that's not an exact science, but as we take the time, it can be powerful for the church to connect the generations.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I was interested. I'm going to go off a little off script here, but I'm thumbing through some of the pages and in conversation 5, you talk about a danger sign has the family become more important than the church? I'm just curious tell us a little bit about that thought and what we can pay attention to.
Yeah, that one's a big one to me. And I noticed that in my visits to churches, Tom. And that is, we have to remember that theologically, biblically, that God ordained two institutions, the home and the church. And I'm afraid, I mean, Tom, I met Christian parents, and I'm all about my family. I started, when you asked me to introduce myself, right? I mean, other than my relationship with Christ, I talked about my family. I get it. Anybody that knows me, I'm a big family guy. I mean, I love to minister with my kids and now my grandkids. But if we're saying that my family is more important than the church, then I think we're making a mistake. I don't think you can defend that theologically or biblically. I think God, in fact, in Ephesians, I put this in my book, in Ephesians, you read Ephesians, you come to Ephesians 4, and it talks about the mission, the purpose of the church, and Paul says that they no longer be children, but that they'll grow up. You come to Ephesians 6, parents, especially fathers, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. actually the two institutions need to be doing the same things. Mm-hmm. And here's what happened, why I wrote about the chapter, and that is, it was a year ago, and all of my ministries, I meet with a lot of student pastors, a lot of them, and I started asking them in places where I spoke or in places where I ministered, what's your biggest frustration? And the number one frustration of student ministry guys across the country was parents who won't commit to church youth group for their kids. Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Yep.
And these guys talked about the same parents will commit to Little League, they'll commit to soccer, they'll commit to ballet lessons, they'll commit to whatever. My kid has got to get a job to pay for college, but they won't commit to church. And so, okay, am I a guy that can talk about that? And as a parent, as a grandparent, first of all, I want to make a commitment to what God's doing in the world. And what God is doing in the world is his church.
Right.
And so I think that we need to be a part of that, and we need to make a commitment. And I write about this in the book, the days of that godliness equals busyness. I'm not that guy either.
Yeah.
But Tom, here's what happens, and that is parents say, I'm going to spend time with my family, and it turns into an excuse to stay away from church. What they mean is I'm going to go to a ball game, yeah, or I'm gonna do this. And I'm just saying, hey, think that through. Think through and again, my book is, the subtitle is A Practical Conversation for Christian Parents and Church Leaders. Mm-hmm. And I want to be a part of the conversation. And here's what I'm asking. What do you want for your kids? If you want your kids to grow up and go on for God, then let's build those godly priorities, which one of them is going to be the church, and what's the church doing in the world today.
Right. Yeah, you know, and we've been having this conversation both in children's ministry worlds that I circle in, as well as student ministry, where, you know, we're wondering, and I will say there, and I, because I said this on a different episode of the podcast with some other guests, of how there's been a real cynicism creeping into both children's ministry leaders circles and in student ministry leaders, where we've become cynical towards parents. Unfortunately,
yep. Yep.
By accusing them of having no interest in discipling their children, you know, and we throw Deuteronomy 6 at them and say, you know, you got to pick up the ball and let's go. And, yep, you know, but I don't necessarily know that that's true. I think, and maybe you can verify this too, from your experience of talking with so many people, that I think parents want to do it. They just don't know how.
Yep.
Because
yep,
nobody has discipled them really
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
So that
yeah,
they can do that. And I think part of that is because there's been a generation of that are now parents that nobody discipled them or got right, involved with them like what you're showing now.
Right.
You know, that if there had been more intergenerational leadership and more people stepping into their spiritual circle, they would have a model to go from.
Yeah. In fact, I write about that in the book. That's an excellent question. My wife and I travel a lot, and one of the things that we do is do parenting conferences. And all that means is, again, I'm old. I'm old enough that I can talk about this, and I've lived through the teenage years, and now we're in the grandparent stage, and so on. But here's the dilemma, Tommy, and you talked about it, and that is, at one case, we're hearing people around the country saying parents are the primary disciplers of their kids.
Yep.
And I would say, okay, amen. But then on the other hand, that people that I know that are in kids ministry or student ministries are saying, well, wait a minute, is that really happening, or are they committing to everything else but the church? And so I think that there is a dilemma that is going on. And again, what I want to just say to parents and so on, and that is, let's ask ourselves the question, what do we want for our kids? If what we want for them is for them to grow up and go on for God, then let's yeah, build these things into their lives. And Tom, again, it's like, let me go back to that mentoring thing, and I don't mm-hmm, want to just say this over and over and over again, but we can't forget that Titus 2 is in the Bible.
Right on.
And this thing, again, this intergenerational thing, Tom, we're lousy at that in adult ministries too. Here's what we do. We put the senior citizens in a room with other senior citizens. We put parents of teenagers in a room with other parents of teenagers. We put young parents in a room with other young parents. What about Titus 2? Yeah. The church is an incredible resource. And one of the things that young parents need to understand is at church is where you're going to find old parents. Parents who've gone through the battles, parents who understand about what it's like living through the junior high years, the middle school years, and all of that. And we've got to get back to that concept, the Titus 2, where older women can teach younger women. Teach them what? It starts with love their husband, love their children. Yeah. And the church is the place where those things happen. And I think as we develop intergenerational connections and have the people from both sides realize how important it is, we're likely to have more intentionality be there in student ministry, kids ministry, but also in parenting.
Yeah. And so we've been kind of hitting some of this, but what do you see as some of the greatest benefits if a leader starts taking this book and starts implementing and saying, okay, we're going to set up a strategy to really bring the generations together? What are some of those big benefits that you can see? I mean, I think they're pretty obvious, but I don't always like to assume anything anymore today. So what do you see as some of the benefits for pulling this together?
Yeah, well, again, I think that one of the benefits is that we have to shatter this age segregation thing. And I keep harping at that. But as we get the old, Mel, where do you start? Start old, start young. As we get the oldest people to pray specifically, individually, by name for the younger people, and I get it that sometimes the bigger churches are going to have a hard time. We'll divide them up. What happens then is God puts a burden on the oldest people for the young people. And once God puts a burden on their heart, then external things like you know, like tattoos or hair or clothing tends to fade away if you really burden. And let's not forget, you know, Paul told Timothy, let no man despise your youth, but be an example. You can't be an example in a vacuum. And as the younger people are ministering, are respecting the older people, then there will be this commonality of respect. And I think the benefit is the generations will start to connect. And then we can do things like just have socials, get together and play games, get the older people. One of the things I encourage student pastors, but also, you know, kids ministry pastors too, is to get the older people to come and just tell their story, what it's like living for God over the long haul. And it's amazing how we can turn this ship, if you will, slowly. And again, the benefits are that kids will grow up and go on for God as we connect that. And again, Tom, what I want is, and I feel like I'm sounding like a know-it-all. Not at all. I'm a fellow struggler, but I want to be a part of the conversation. I want to launch conversations on this.
Yeah. You know, Mel, I remember you sharing that concept of getting together socially back at a Vision for Youth conference. And I went back to my student ministry and I got my youth group together and we invited our senior citizens group. I hate even saying that, but because that sounds, I don't even like that term, but yeah, I guess maybe it's because I'm closer too. So. but we brought our seniors over and we had a party night. And so we said, all right, here's what we want to do. We want to do this twice. So the first time, our students are going to actually, no, we had the seniors go first. We told the seniors, they planned the whole thing. We wanted them to pick the food, the games, whatever they want to do, however they want to do it. And I'll tell you, my kids were nervous. They were like, what are we going to do? Oh, great. We're going to sit around and play Pinochle or something. You know, yep. I think they had Tiddlywinks. I don't know. Well, that's really old.
Yeah.
I mean, our students were legitimately nervous. But you know what? I found out later, all the senior adults were just as terrified.
Yep.
But we came in and it was the best thing we'd ever done. Hmm. We've never laughed so hard. Yep. I mean, to the point where we're like, please stop. We can't take this anymore. Wow. This is so much, you know, we played some old school games and they did some storytelling. And there were a couple of times where I know my student leaders and I were standing back in the corner going, can they say that? did they just say that? You know, yeah. and our kids were, you know, of course, some of the times the kids had no clue exactly what was so funny. But it was the best time. And then we flipped it and the students got to do one and the seniors loved it. Yeah. And it brought our group together. And I got to tell people, if you're listening and you just heard that, I want to say, yeah, as children's ministry leaders, think about what you could do to have a way that families could get together with seniors in your church. And then student ministry leaders, get your youth group together and invite your senior adults to come over and have a party and give them the role of playing some games while the students do. You know, you could swap it. You don't have to do two separate things. You could just give each group a part of it and say, you plan this part, we'll bring this part.
Yeah.
And watch.
And it's amazing around those round tables in the church fellowship hall, amazing conversations start to happen.
Absolutely.
And we can't forget, I mean, as the older people in the church are in one way or another have been or are the power brokers with the finances and all of that. And there's very practical things for getting, let alone the fact of what you want is for the older people to tell the stories, what it's like living for God over the long haul. Yeah. And that's what we want for our kids too.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, really, as we get ready to wrap this up, if there was one big takeaway you want leaders and parents to grab from this book, what is it?
Yeah. The takeaway is have a conversation. Let's not live with these frustrations where parents think the youth workers, the kids don't understand. They don't understand how busy parenting is today. Every parent that I know of feels like they're incredibly busy. My kid has to work. My kid's got all these extracurricular activities. Homework is harder than it's ever been, you know, saving money for college or whatever. Right. And I talk about that in the book. I talk how pastors, all of us, need to realize the days of programming to the nth degree have got to stop too.
Wow,
and it's like where we can't expect busy parents just to drop everything, come to us. But it might mean that we're willing to meet with individual kids for coffee before school or something like that instead. So I talk about that kind of thing in the book. But I guess the takeaway is have a conversation. Don't live in frustration when, again, go back to what I talked about, that one book of Ephesians. We're doing the same things. Right. And what we want as church leaders and what we want as Christian parents is for our kids to grow up and go on for God. That's what we want. And so let's start having the conversation and be intentional about what we do.
Wow. Mel, thanks so much. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I want to encourage people to get onto Amazon and pick up this book, because it is a great read. It's a great opportunity. Like I say, buy multiple copies of this and get it into your leadership hands, get it into your student ministry, your children's ministry, and bring everybody to the table.
Can I make a plug for that, Tom?
Absolutely.
My website for the book is called goingonforgod.com, goingonforgod.com. And on there is my bio. On there is how people can get in touch with me. Good. I would love to be a part of the conversation. My wife and I do parenting conferences. I would love to come and talk with your staff. Maybe we could do coaching or consulting about that. But also, if people want, I could offer them a discount for multiple copies. If they want to read it as a team, if they want to read it or buy a copy for their parents or whatever, certainly I can work with them on that. And the price on Amazon.com is like $17.99, but you always talk to the author. The author can give you a deal. So that's how to get in touch with me, is on my website, Going On For God. And what we're going to do is commit to putting more and more free resources on that website too, that are going to be for church leaders and also Christian parents as time goes on and as this ministry about the book expands.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for doing that, Mel. how can they reach out to you on social media, or what's the best way, or can they email you right through that site?
Yeah, if they go there, they can email me, which is there. My ministry is Vision for Youth, so my email is simply mel@visionforyouth.com. That's the easiest one, mel@visionforyouth.com. That website is goingonforgod.com or .org, both works. And then I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter, it's VF Youth. But so there's lots of ways they can get in touch with me, but those are the easiest ways, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate having you on. I hope that lots of people will get this, because we truly do want to see our next generation going on for God all out, full force.
Amen. Amen.
We don't have a lot of time left, so let's make the most of it.
Amen. Amen.
Thanks, Mel.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group, or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.